Good evening. I want to thank everybody for coming to our Thursday night Parsha series. This week we're most fortunate to have our Rabbi Adler, who will impart tonight his Divrei Torah on this week's Parsha. I want to thank Rabbi Adler personally for always saying yes unless he has something scheduled, and it's greatly appreciated. Over the next few weeks, Dr. Lieber Cohen is next week, Rabbi Mark Gottlieb, then there's Purim. After Purim, there's 1 week I haven't filled yet, then Rabbi Yehuda Halpert, and then the week in the day before Pesach at 8:15 as opposed to 8:30, Rabbi Adler will be giving Divrei Haggadah. But that's a while away. So without further ado, thank you, Rabbi Adler.
A pleasure. Okay, Rabotai, what I'd like to focus on tonight is the last perek of Parshas Mishpatim, chapter 24, and do two things. Number one, share with you the machlokes between Rashi and the Ramban as to whether this particular chapter, the entire chapter, is in its proper order or not, or it's out of order, and then look at other examples of this phenomenon that exists, according to Rashi and Ibn Ezra, dozens of times in the Chumash, namely, no chronological order to the narrative of the Torah. Is there any logic to it? Do we always apply Ein Mukdam Mamuchal BaTorah? And to perhaps understand that as well. So I want to use this as a springboard for a broader discussion about Ein Mukdam Mamuchal BaTorah and understand the nature of the machloket between Rashi and the Ramban about where this particular chapter belongs. So if you'll go to Perek Chav Dalet a minute, we'll start with the Perek itself. The Torah states, Ve'el Moshe Omar, Alei El Hashem, Ata Ve'aharon Nadav Ve'avihu, Ve'shivim Mizikne Yisrael, Ve'shtachavisem Merachok. I want you to come up to the mountain. You, Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, the 70 elders of Bnei Yisrael, and you will bow down at a distance. In other words, not everybody who was just mentioned is going up to Har Sinai. Who's the only one going up to Har Sinai? Moshe, as it says in the next paragraph, the next pasuk, V'nigash Moshe levado el Hashem, v'heim lo yigashu. So this is the end of Parshat Mishpatim. There was chapter 21, 22, and 23, which constitutes the other parts of Parshat Mishpatim. And yet, the opening of Perek Chav Dalet is that Moshe is going up the mountain. When did Moshe go up the mountain? Before Mamad Har Sinai. So Rashi believes, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Ve'el Moshe Omar, Parsha zu ne'emra kodem aseret hadibrot bidalid besivan ne'emar lo alev. Rashi is of the opinion, as he does dozens of times throughout the Chumash, that ein mukdam u'uchar batorah, there is no order to the narrative of the Torah. And as a result, despite the fact that this chapter 24 appears after number 23, that's not when it took place. It took place after chapter 19. Chapter 19 is the preparatory, introductory chapter to the Aseret HaDibrot. We read it last week. And it reads, Bachodesh HaShlishi, in the third month, Am Yisrael came to Bo'u Midbar Sinai. They came to Sinai. And God shares with Moshe all of the instructions how to prepare for Matan Torah. How to prepare for Matan Torah. So this entire chapter took place right after chapter 19. God begins to speak to Moshe on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and he relays various instructions, some on the first day, some on the second day, some on the third day, some on the fourth day. And as to when Kabbalat HaTorah took place, we're not 100% sure. It was either the 5th of Sivan, the 6th of Sivan, or the 7th of Sivan. We're not 100% sure which day it was. And it could actually have been any one of the three, depending on how many days the month of Iyar and Nisan had. Don't forget, we know that there were exactly 49 days between the second day of Pesach and the day of Shavuot. So, because we count the Omer. And in fact, the Torah never gives a date for the Yom Tov of Shavuot. Every other Yom Tov has a date assigned to it. Be'echad HaChodesh HaShvi'i is Rosh Hashanah. Be'asor LaChodesh HaShvi'i is Yom Kippur. Chamisha Asayom LaChodesh HaRishon is Pesach. But there is no date for Shavuos, because you don't have to give a date. All you do is watch Sesame Street and you speak to the count. 1, 2, 3. And when you get to 49, the next day is Shavuos. However, as to what date on the calendar, that would depend on how many days are eaten by each of the days of the Omer. So if there are 30 days to the month of Nisan, because the moon didn't come out on the 29th, nobody saw the new moon, and there were 30 days to the month of Iyar, because on the 30th day, after 29 days, nobody saw the moon that night. So then Shavuot is going to be, the giving of the Torah took place on the 5th day of the month of Sivan. If one of the 2 months had 29 days, because on the 30th day somebody came to Beit Din and said, oh, last night I saw the new moon. So the 30th day, since the last month, will have been declared as Rosh Chodesh. So if one of them had 30 days and the other one had 29, the giving of the Torah took place on the 6th day of the month of Sivan. But if both of them had 29 days, and the 30th day was already declared as Rosh Chodesh, then 2 days of the Omer are missing, so you have to go 2 days later, so therefore the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan. In our calendar, Nisan always has 30 days, Iyar always has 29 days. That's why Shavuot, in our calendar, is always on the 6th day of the month of Sivan. So Rashi claims that this particular parsha was given on the 4th day, so it's either 1 or 2 days prior to Kabbalat HaTorah. Now Rashi rarely, if ever, tells us why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu try to play games with us? If he authors the entire Torah, why wouldn't he put chapter 24 right next to chapter 19? Which it follows sequentially based on when things were unfolding. Because chapter 19, as I just said, is when they came to Midbar Sinai. That was on the first day of the month. So why does he play these games? Rashi here doesn't tell us. And he rarely does. He just notes, don't get worried, because I believe in Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah. And the Ramban, says, I never believe in Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah, with one exception where I have to agree to it, which is chapter 1 of Sefer Bamidbar, and chapter 9 of Sefer Bamidbar. I have to agree that there is Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah, because the Torah gives the dates. And the date of chapter 9 is a month earlier than chapter 1, the date given at chapter 1. Chapter 1 is given the second month of the year, and chapter 9 of Sefer Bamidbar, we'll take a look at it, is given on the first month of the year. So the Ramban says, I'm defeated. We'll see the Ramban in a minute. But no other time does the Ramban agree to the principle of Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah. So according to the Ramban, this chapter took place here, right here and now. So I can tell you what is driving Rashi to disagree with the Ramban. I can tell you what. The Ramban tells us in his code that all of the laws of conversion are learnt out from these parshiyot. So tell me, when a potential convert comes, what are the ceremonial, symbolic gestures or activities which a ger is involved in? What do you have to do in order to become Jewish? What do you have to do? What? If you're a male, you have to have milah. What else? You have to go to the mikvah, tefillah, kabbalah, hamitzvot, and you have to bring a korban. Have to bring a korban. Says the Rambam, I'll tell you where I learned this out from. So now, go to Shmot chapter 13. Shmot chapter 13. It's at the end of Parshat Bo. It's actually chapter 12. Excuse me. The end of chapter 12. Which is right before the drama as Bnei Yisrael are leaving. So in Pasuk Mem Gimel, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'Aharon, chapter 12, verse Mem Gimel, Zot Chukat HaPosach, Kol Ben Nechar Lo Yochal Bo. A stranger, a Gentile, is not permitted to eat Korban Pesach. And then it says, these are some of the laws of Korban Pesach. Now look at Pasuk Memchet, V'chi yagur itcha ger v'asa Pesach l'Hashem, himolo kol zachar. Circumcise every male. And at the end of the Pasuk, V'chol orel lo yochal bo. So one of the laws of Korban Pesach is that if a Jew is uncircumcised, he's not permitted to partake of the Korban Pesach. So, did the Jews in Mitzrayim eat a Korban Pesach? Yes, they did. We are told that in that Parsha, Parshat Bo. They brought a Korban Pesach for the first time in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim. And here we are told that if you are uncircumcised, you're not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. So what assumption must you make about the Jew in Mitzrayim? What did he do? Every Jew was circumcised. Okay? And that also takes place before Kabbalat HaTorah. Now go to chapter 19. Chapter 19 of Sefer Shmot. Chapter 19, which we read, you couldn't have forgotten it, because it was only 5 days ago. We read it this past Shabbos. So God is giving them instructions how to prepare for Kabbalat HaTorah. And look at Pasuk Yud Dalid, Vayered Moshe min Hahar el Ha'am, Vayikadesh et Ha'am. He sanctified the people. And what did they do? Vayechapsu Simlotam. They washed their garments. This was not using tide or all. No. What does it mean? They put it into a mikvah. That's what they did. Kibus begadim doesn't mean to get clean, but to sanctify. Says the Mechilta, Ein kibus begadim beli tvila. There is never a situation when you have to immerse your garments without having to immerse yourself. The halacha of immersing the garment is found several times in Sefer Vayikra in the context of a variety of spiritual tumot. So sometimes the Torah says, v'chibes bigadav, he has to wash his clothing. But every single time there's an instruction to wash your clothing, the individual who became tameh and his garments became tameh, the individual also has to immerse in the mikvah. So when it says here, vayechapsu simlotam, what says Rambam, what also took place? Every Jew immersed in a mikvah. Immersed in a mikvah. So that's a second aspect of what? Of Geirut. Of Geirut. Because the Jews were undergoing Geirut at Mamre Har Sinai. Because what is the definition of Geirut? To accept upon yourself 606 different mitzvot. Seven mitzvot we are commanded because we are a member of society. We're members of the world. And all of the world had to observe the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach up until now. And as a result, now we're becoming, we're converting, so it's an additional 606 mitzvot. That is what Geirut is all about. So we have Mila in Mitzrayim, a mikvah here in right before Mamad Har Sinai. That's what it means, Vayikadesh Otam. He sanctified them and their garments by immersing all of them in the mikvah. And the third component is written in Parshas Mishpatim that they brought a korban. So look at Perek Chaf Dalet for just a second. Now Perek Chaf Dalet, and it says, Vayishlach in Pasuk Hey, Vayishlach et Na'arei v'nei Yisrael Vaya'alu Olot Vayizbechu Zivachim L'Shlamim L'Hashem Parim. They offered various korbanot, Olot and Shlamim. So the Gemara in Kritut tells us that if there is a Beit HaMikdash, all three components are required for Geirut. Mila, Tfila, and Hava'at Korban. In the absence of a Beit HaMikdash, we only perform two of the rituals. But should the Beit HaMikdash be built, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, tomorrow morning, every single convert who is alive today has to run to the Har HaBayit and bring that korban, called the korban of Geirut. Geirut. So now tell me, Rabotai, why Rashi feels compelled to tell us that chapter 24 is actually written after chapter 19. Tell me what's driving Rashi. Because if I have conversion, and the other two steps of conversion took place when? Prior to Mamad Har Sinai, why wouldn't the third aspect take place prior to Mamad Har Sinai? And therefore Rashi says it's out of order. I can't tell you, I know why I have to say this, but why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu write it this way? You're going to have to wait until you reach 120, and then there is a long line of people waiting to ask the Rabbanu Shel Olam that very specific question. Why did you author it in such a fashion? Fine. So now what's imperative upon us is to explain the Ramban. Why does the Ramban believe that the Geirut, the conversion process of Bnei Yisrael, was split? Two aspects of Geirut take place before Mamad Har Sinai, and the Korban only takes place after Mamad Har Sinai, according to the Ramban. Why is it that? So, the Rav once suggested the following. That what's happening here is as follows. Take a look at in Pasuk Gimel. Vayavo Moshe vayisaper la'am eight kol divrei Hashem ve'eit kol ha-mishpatim. So how would Rashi translate? You can look at Rashi. Tell me how Rashi interprets what exactly did Moshe tell Am Yisrael when he told them all of the Mishpatim? What Mishpatim? There haven't been any Mishpatim yet because the Torah hasn't been given. So what is Rashi compelled to say? What does the word Mishpatim mean? Take a look at Rashi. Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. It's only the seven Noachidic laws which somehow have been transmitted to every single Gentile, and Shabbat, Kibur Avaim, Upara Aduma, V'dinin Shenitnu Lahem Bimara. If you go to chapter 15 for just a moment of Sefer Shmot, go to chapter 15. It's right after the Shira, chapter 15, and in verse 20, beginning with Pasuk Chaf Bet, Am Yisrael travel from the Yam Suf, 3 days worth of travel, and they have no water to drink. And right away, they burcher. They start complaining. Burchering. So Moshe tells, HaKadosh tells Moshe to throw a piece of wood into the water, and the waters are sweetened. Now I'm reading Pasuk Chafei. Vayitzak el Hashem, Vayoreyu Hashem Eitz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him a piece of wood, Vayashlech el Hamayim, Vayimtaku Hamayim. Here is the critical phrase. Sham sum lo chok u'mishpat. There, in the city of Mara, Am Yisrael were legislated chok u'mishpat. I gave them some of the laws of the Torah. So everybody says that the mitzvah of Shabbat is one of them because it's going to be the next parsha. How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu teach Shabbat? Show and tell. The man is going to fall for 6 days, and on the seventh day there is no man. So everyone agrees that Shabbat was one of them. Then everyone agrees that Dinim was one of the laws conveyed at Mara. Everyone agrees to that. Then there is a debate how to read a word in the Gemara. The Gemara either wrote Pei Aleph or Kaf Aleph. And a Pei, if you're a sloppy handwriting, a Kaf, if you have sloppy handwriting, can be turned into what? A Pei. So some believe that it was a Kaf, and it's a contraction for Kibud Av, Va'em. And others say it's a Pei, so it's Paraduma. Okay? One of the two is right, because we know that there are only 3 mitzvot given at Mara. That we know for sure. So either it was Shabbat, Kibud Av Va'em and Dinin, or it was Shabbat, Paraduma and Dinin. Here Rashi doesn't want to get involved in that debate, so what does Rashi say? What does Rashi say was given at Mara? Both of them. Kibud Av Va'em and Paraduma and Dinin and the mitzvah of Shabbat. But that's it. Couldn't have been Parshas Mishpatim, because Parshas Mishpatim hasn't happened yet. Parshas Mishpatim is after Kabbalat HaTorah. However, the Ramban believes that when the phrase says that God, going back now to chapter 24, verse 5, that Moshe tells Am Yisrael et HaMishpatim, what is he telling Am Yisrael? All of Parshas Mishpatim. Because everything in its normal chronological order. And now, chapter 24 is just telling us that the conclusion of the Geirut of Am Yisrael will take place now. So what did Moshe tell Am Yisrael? He told them the Mishpatim. All of the Mishpatim, which we will have read this Shabbos after Kabbalat HaTorah. But why, according to the Ramban, are we splitting the Geirut of Am Yisrael? There are 2 different ways in which we can obligate ourselves to God to observe mitzvot. One is, which is halachically identified as what we call hitchayvut. A hitchayvut. Where we obligate ourselves to somebody to do something. For example, I can obligate myself to you to owe you $1,000 even though I didn't buy anything from you. I didn't borrow any money from you. But I can create an obligation to you simply by using a kinyan sudar. Did anybody ever witness a kinyan sudar taking place? Sure. At a wedding, we take a handkerchief. So if I am the Masada Kedushin, and I want the chassan to obligate himself to pay to obligate himself to the conditions of the ketubah, so I take out my handkerchief. I am representing the kala, and I give it to the chassan, and he picks it up in the presence of 2 witnesses. So he just obligated himself to the conditions of the ksuba, which now say that should he divorce her, or should he predecease her, he is now, right now, obligating himself to pay the monetary 200 silver pieces that are mentioned in the ksuba. It's about $17,000 today. Okay, fine. If there is a prenup, and I hope there is a prenup with all of your children, so once again, I ask the chatan, in the presence of two witnesses, to pick up my handkerchief. He picks it up. And by picking up that handkerchief, he obligated himself right of that moment that in case the marriage goes haywire and they're not living together, and Bet Din instructs him to give your wife a get, if he refuses to do so, as of the moment of the wedding, he is obligating himself to pay his wife $150 a day. If he doesn't pay that $150 a day, the civil court will throw him to jail because he violated contract law. That's what the halachic prenup is all about. But the way he obligates himself is simply by picking up a handkerchief, picking up a kinyan suda. You can obligate yourself to do anything by accepting this handkerchief. So if I want to obligate myself to you to pay you $1,000, even though I didn't borrow any money, I didn't buy anything, I can just create that debt obligation. You'll take out your handkerchief, I'll pick it up, in the presence of two witnesses, I now owe you $1,000. So there is a way to create an obligation, and that's called a hitchayvut. Now, a hitchayvut has a lien attached to all of my properties. Now, I made this hitchayvut to you. All of my properties are somehow mortgaged to you. So if I don't have the money to pay you the $1,000, what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to take any of my assets. What happens if I sold my assets to somebody else? What do you have a right to do? As a creditor of mine, you have a right to go to that person and take all of the assets that I sold to you. You have a right to go collect it, because I had no right to sell it, because it's mortgaged unto you to pay my debt in case I don't have cash. So there is a certain relationship that is created between somebody who makes a hitchayvut. But you don't owe me. You don't own me. You don't own me. I have obligations to you. You have certain rights to my assets, but you don't own me. Says the Ramban, at Mamar Har Sinai, we initially only established a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is parallel to what? To this obligation. God is offering the Torah, and we obligated ourselves to observe those mitzvot. We made a hitchayvut. We said, Na'asa v'nishma, we'll observe it. That was one degree of a relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. However, Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the relationship to go one step further. Not simply that the relationship between God and ourselves is going to be that of debtor and creditor, but God wanted us to be slaves of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Slaves. Slaves is a much more powerful connection between God and us simply than being a debtor, that I owe you something. I made a commitment to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a hitchayvut, that I'll observe the mitzvot. No. I want you to go much further than that. Says the Mechilta, on the phrase, Ve'atem tihiyu li mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, which is written in chapter 19, says the Mechilta, Shetihiyu kenuyim li. You should, I want to own you. Own you. And what, that's what a slave is. A slave is owned by the master. What is the greatest title or description that we give to, about Moshe Rabbeinu? The greatest accolade, the highest accolade. Vayamat Moshe Eved Hashem. Eved Hashem is the greatest accolade you can possibly give. Here, says the Ramban, now in chapter 24, what is happening is that the relationship between man and God is becoming intensified. In Parshat Yitro in chapter 19, we obligated ourselves. We told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh. We'll do whatever you want. That's an obligation. What's happening now is that Am Yisrael are becoming servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Ramban, I do not believe that B'nai Yisrael were capable of that type of a commitment prior to the giving of the Aseret HaDibrot. What did they have to hear from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in order to psychologically be prepared to become God's servant? What did they have to hear? They had to hear the Dibrot themselves, especially the first one. What does the first one say? Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mi'Beit Avadim. I am the God who took you out of Mitzrayim. Now why did I take you out of Mitzrayim? Not to become free people, but to become my slaves. So you're no longer going to be an Eved unto Paro, but you're going to be an Eved unto me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So psychologically, claims the Ramban, Am Yisrael were not yet prepared prior to Sinai to make that commitment of Avdut unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is only after they heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, and Lo Yihye Lecha Elohim Acherim Al Panai, and what were they scheduled to hear directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? All 10 Dibrot. That was the initial plan. But they, as we saw at the end of last week's Parsha, B'nai Yisrael came crying to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's just too much. We can't take it anymore. It's just too overpowering. So after the second dibur, Moshe said, okay, they told, Daber atav nishma'a. You speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mo, Ba'al yidaber elohim imanu penamot. We're just afraid we're going to die. But they at least heard the first two. And what else did they hear according to the Ramban, if everything is what? If everything is in its proper order. They heard all of Parshas Mishpatim. But at least having heard something from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now they were in a position to understand why God is demanding of them that we become slaves unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Geirut of Am Yisrael, according to the Ramban, was indeed split into two parts. The first part took place prior to Mamad Har Sinai, and that was through Mila and Tvila, and at that time they only made a lower level of Hitchayvut. They said, we'll obligate ourselves. They picked up the handkerchief as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu extended the handkerchief. We picked it up and we said, we'll do every single mitzvah that you want us to do. But we had not yet submitted to become HaKadosh Baruch Hu's slaves. After Mamad Har Sinai, after God had revealed Himself and said, "Anoichi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiticha Me'eretz Yisrael Mi'Beit Avodim," and "Lo Yihye Elohim Elohim Achrim Al Panai," nobody else can be your master. Nobody else can be your God. Then Am Yisrael here are now preparing to intensify the Geirut and are willing to become slaves unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore the Ramban says this chapter completed the conversion process of Am Yisrael, but it could not have taken place until they experienced Ma'amar Har Sinai and hearing the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And once they heard that God said, you have to remember, I am the Lord, and what else did they hear? Take a look at Rashi's commentary in Perek Chav Dalet, and here the Ramban agrees with Rashi for a change. We're on that very pasuk that I ask you to look at. In pasuk Gimel, Vayisaper la'am et kol divrei Hashem. So what did he say? Vayisaper la'am et kol divrei Hashem. So and Moshe writes it down. Vayichtov Moshe. What does it say? Et kol divrei Hashem. Moshe wrote it down. What did he write down? So take a look at Rashi. Mibereshis v'ad matan Torah. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu write down now from Bereshis and onward? Because what happened in Bereshis? God created the world. So now I'm telling you why I expect you to be my slave. Not because there are any mitzvot. Forget about that. Not because you're going to make an obligation. You know why you're going to be my slave? Because I created you. And by virtue of creating you, I own you. And that's what's happening now at this particular unit. And what becomes the symbol of man's avdut unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What becomes the symbol? What symbol of Geirut? The korban. What happens when you bring a korban? You take an animal. By right, who should have been that particular korban? You should have been that korban. We have to be willing to sacrifice ourselves unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we recognize that He is master and owner of every single human being. So the symbol now becomes the sprinkling of the blood, Vayizrok Adam, because we recognize that we should have been put on that Mizbeach. We have an obligation. If God tells us to put ourselves on the Mizbeach, we belong in that Mizbeach. So therefore, claims the Ramban, this chapter is in its proper place. Because after having experienced an experience such as the drama of Ma'amar Har Sinai, now they are prepared to elevate their commitment and obligation from an ordinary debtor-creditor relationship to one of master and slave. Master and slave. So that's why the Ramban disagrees because he doesn't agree with Ein Mukta Mucha Batorah. Yes.
How does Ramban explain Moshe going up to Har Sinai?
What's the problem? How could he goes up again? He's going up to Har Sinai many times. He will go up to Har Sinai after Parsha Kisisa. Because what's going to happen? There goes Chazal.
This is separate.
Separate, exactly. Moshe came down with the Luchot. And he started telling part of the Torah, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu summoned him back up to Har Sinai. And I want you, where he said, I now want to intensify my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's exactly, it's happening right here and now. Not previously. It happened previously, but this is the second time. Second time. So that's what happens here in Perek Chav Dalet. But I just wanted to spend a minute, the remaining 4 minutes, 5 minutes, about that which we identified Ein Mukta Mucha Batorah. So take a look at page number 1 for a minute. So Bahar Sinai, this is Ibn Ezra. This is Parshas Bahar, chapter 25 of Sefer Vayikra. Says to Ibn Ezra, V'zu ha-parsha koidem vayikra. V'kol ha-parshiot shehem acharav. All of the parshiot that follow Parshas Bahar. Bahar, Bechukosai, Bamidbar, Naso, until the middle of Bahalotcha, says Ibn Ezra, they're all out of sequence, out of order. Ki hadibur Bahar Sinai. Because it says at the beginning of chapter 25, verse 1, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. Well, when did God speak to Moshe at Sinai? When Am Yisrael were at Sinai. So Vayikra chapter 25 takes place at the same time of Parshas Yisro. That's in another book. That's how out of order it is. And he'll explain why I had to explain all of Sefer Vayikra before I get to this. But, you know, he is using this particular principle for vast chunks of Chumash. Not just one pasuk or one parak, but literally parsha after parsha after parsha. Go to page number 2, which is a Yalkut Shimoni. Now here, the Yalkut Shimoni is going to make a statement about a limitation on a Mukta Mamucha Batorah. The Yalkut will say that you can look at it tonight. There are not many good ball games on tonight, so when you get home you can look at it. The Yalkut will say that the only, I bracketed the relevant portion, the only time that we say a Mukta Mamucha Batorah is if it's in two different topics. But to employ a Mukta Mamucha Batorah in the very same topic, that's absurd. To claim that in the same unit, one detail is it's written afterwards and it took place before. And the Yalkut Shimoni offers a proof that it has to be that way. One of the 13 midot shahatorah nidrashet bahen is called a klal prat uklal. Klal prat uklal means that in a sequence you have a generality, klal, a detail, and a generality. And we darshan it in a particular fashion, says the Yalkut Shimoni. If there is no chronological order within one topic, how do you know it was recited as a klal prat uklal? Maybe the prat was actually said before the klal. So then it's not a klal prat uklal. Then it's a prat uklal uklal. And the rule doesn't apply. So based on the fact that Chazal used klal prat uklal as one of the midot shehatorah nidrashet behen, therefore this Yalkut Shimoni, which is a Medrash Agada, says it's within one topic. Everything is written in its proper chronological order. However, if you go to page 3, the Yerushalmi disagrees. So go now to chapter 25, verse 21 for a minute. You'll see it. You'll see why the Yerushalmi has to say, in the very same pasuk, things are out of order. Go to chapter 25, which we'll read next week in Yeretz Hashem, not this Shabbos. And look at pasuk Chafal. Chafhei Chafal. It says, V'nasata et ha-kaporet al ha'aron numala. You are to put the kaporet. The kaporet is the cover of the aron. After you put the cover on, can you put anything in it? No. Well, what about the next phrase? The next phrase, the El Ha'aron Titena To'edut Asher Etene Lecha. You will put the Edut. That's the Luchot. The Luchot go in the Aron. So the Yerushalmi says, how can you put anything in once you put the Kaporet on? So what does the Yerushalmi say? A Mukdam Mu'urcha Batorah. So the last phrase of this pasuk was actually said before that phrase. It sounds a little ludicrous that in one pasuk God said it out of order just to confuse us and make the Talmud Yerushalmi, that's what you'll see there, say, oh, we say a mukdam mucham batorah there. It's highly irregular. Highly irregular. Another example is in Shmot chapter 19, verse 13. Go to Perek Yutet. With this I'll close. Shmot Yutet Pasuk Yud Gimel. So that Pasuk is talking about people who deserve, who have to be stoned. Skila. Certain transgressions, such as Chilul Shabbos, are put to death by stoning. So the pasuk says, "Sakol yisakel o yoro yireh." Yaro yireh means you're pushed off a mountain. It's a cliff, a small little mountain, and then they throw stones at you. Well, which phrase comes first? It says, "Sakol yisakel." So the Gemara says, "No. First, you have to push him off. And if he doesn't die with that, then what do? Then you..." These two words next to each other, written out of order. So, hopefully we're all 120, we'll all stand in line and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you a prankster? Why did you write the word Yaro Yireh, Sakol Yisakel first, if you first you do the Yaro Yireh? Why? And nobody explains. They just point out the phenomenon, but I have not found one decent explanation as to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu plays tricks with us and says Ein Mukdam Mocha B'Torah. But the Ramban said, I never accept that, never, except for that one time, because he says it makes no sense that the Torah would be written out of its chronological order. The one time, I have to acknowledge it, and I'll explain to you when I get to it, why those two chapters, chapter 1 and chapter 9 of Sefer Bamidbar, are out of order. All right? We'll stop here.
Oh, Shalom Aleichem. How are you doing?
Press this.
To end it.